Everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Scouting the League. Merry Christmas to everyone. Hope your travels are smooth. If you're staying home, everyone stay safe and healthy. Of course, I am Roderick David, NFL Scout. Lots of work on this 2024 class. Already starting to take a peek at some of these 2025 guys. Keeping an eye on all things NFL. You can find me on X at RightStepADV or my personal account. Don't post as much there at Roderick David. And of course, joined this week with Neil Stratton of Inside the League. He's on X at Inside the League. Neil, good to have you back this week.
Good to be back, Roderick. Thanks for having me as always. Let's talk.
Yeah, bowl games are underway. Rosters are all over. It's a little bit odd looking at some of these teams and who's under center, who's playing, big names opting out, all that kind of stuff. Again, some of these guys, you know, in the transfer portal, choosing to opt out before their teams go with the bowl game. Again, that becomes a personal decision, not right or wrong. There's no right or wrong way to do it. But again, what it means for teams and scouts. If you haven't listened to that episode last week, I definitely think you should do it. Really hit on a lot of the transfer portal stuff, what it means for scouts, how it is changing the landscape. I think forcing teams to get out of their traditional way of doing things. But today, among other things, is the start of early signing period for colleges. Of course, the transfer portal, it doesn't quite mean as much as it used to, I would say. But guys like Dylan Raiola dipping and heading to Nebraska, obviously a huge get for the Huskers. Programs that want to continue to build and develop without the transfer portal are locked in. So a quick question to start for you. Do scouts pay attention to signing day? I would say for the most part, no. Maybe part of the report. Again, guys that were number one overall recruits become number one overall NFL draft prospects. It becomes part of the profile. But again, as we know, every time come draft time, stars don't matter. What you do once you get to your college campus does. Again, no star, one star, two star recruits become big time NFL athletes. That is what matters. But it may be rolled into that your character report, which, you know, that's one of the things we're going to talk about today. So Neil, like I said, welcome back. You have any plans for Christmas as we get into the weekend?
Like most scouts, I'm off the road, and I'm kind of happy about that.
Yep.
We don't have to travel for the holidays because my parents live about 20 minutes in one direction. My wife's family lives about 20 minutes in the other direction, so we're really fortunate in that regard. We used to have to make 16-hour one-way trips when I was a kid to go see my grandparents. So that's a real blessing. Best of luck, and I guess safe travels everyone out there who is hitting the road. It can be a treacherous time, but hopefully it won't be too rocky or too bumpy for anyone out there.
Yeah, certainly. Again, I remember there was one year I took a Christmas Eve trip 3 hours up the road as a pro scout to Charlotte. Thankfully, I was able to make it back that night. Wow. Again, present in advance on Christmas afternoon. You know, it becomes for pro scouts a little bit busier time. For college scouts, hopefully they're getting their time in, maybe keeping an eye on bowl games, juniors in their area, all that kind of stuff. In December, one of the first things we'll talk about today is those December meetings. What are they and why do they matter? Nearly every NFL team is going to get together sometime, usually mid-December. Spoke to some scouts across the league who it was either a last week or the first part of this week. Sit down, start to get a feel for their 2024 draft boards. This is the first time the entire college scouting group is together, probably since training camp. Teams will handle them in any number of ways, but some of the more common elements are character reads, final summary reads, underclassmen to keep an eye on, and who needs more work, more focused work to be done through the All-Star Game, Pro Day, Combine process. Some teams are going to attack the front board. That is really those guys in rounds one through three, start to get those top guys situated. Other teams will hit the bottom board. I'd say this is a little more common. You're talking day three guys, fifth to seventh rounds, start to drop some of those guys off the board, get them into that UDFA, undrafted free agent territory. But through the fall, every area scout is probably going to have done over 300 player reports. Maybe 100 of those will actually have draftable grades. Probably half of those are day three grades. So that day three becomes really really full initially. And again, that's one of those spots where most teams are going to try to start to pair some of those guys out. And that's going to be done any number of ways. Most teams hopefully are within a round or two of their other grades, but again, you'll occasionally get some big difference. You'll talk those out again, early season, late season scouting, scheme change, just the way it's viewed. I think of guys that I went through that situation where we had some major, major discrepancies. I think of guys like Chase Claypool coming out of Notre Dame. I personally had, I think, about a second round grade on him. We had scouts that were in sixth round grades on him. Obviously, he went up there higher, close to the second, still trying to figure out some stuff. Character for him, again, off-field stuff. I, again, needed to answer some questions. Another guy out of Michigan, Mike Onwenu. Again, I saw him as a guard. He's played right tackle for the Patriots. Again, he was a fourth to fifth round to all the way down to an undrafted free agent grade. Again, guys like that sort out. And then another Michigan guy, Josh Uche out of Michigan. Twitchy pass rusher, played under 50% of their defensive snap. Guys like that, again, you just want to try to figure out where they are when you've got maybe three or four grades on them in three or four different spots. You know, it really becomes time to try to, you know, figure out where those guys are going to slot and where through the process they're going to end up. So what do these December meetings entail? Like I said, the first big thing and probably the thing that you spend most of the time on is those character reads. Who is a player? What are they off the field? Everybody's seen the film. Everybody can hop on YouTube. Again, whatever film service you have, watch film. But again, the who they actually are is a huge, huge, huge part of the process. So some of the things that are part of a character read, again, you're going to talk your personal character. Who are you, again, away from the football building, in the classroom, with the community? Then you get to your football character. Are you showing up to meetings? There are most players are going to have quite a few similarities between that personal character, that football character. They're going to mesh. But there are guys who have atrocious personal character because all they care about is football. They are late to class. They're not nice to outside people. But in the football building, they're everything you want them to be. So, again, you hit your personal character, your football character, probably hit on some semblance of football intelligence, instincts. Again, can they learn? Are they going to be able to learn your system? What have they done at their school? You probably some kind of effort, motor, toughness score. And then does he fit your team? Again, you whatever, take your logo, your, you know, is he a Panther fit? Is he a Texan fit? Is he a Seahawk fit? Again, that'll be kind of a defining grade. So those character reads take a good bit of time. Character reads, again, character is where you get your biggest discrepancy from across scouts, depending on your sources. It's also really going to dictate where a scout views a player, both currently and where they think they can get to. Again, a guy that's going to develop or not develop based on all those character traits. Neil, what have you heard, again, from your side, your standpoint, character? What does it mean for players? And again, how do scouts sort through it?
Well, I'm gonna bat it back to you, Roderick. When you were in Atlanta and Chase Claypool came out, I think you still had Julio. And I think you still had Ridley.
Yep.
And we know now that Ridley's made some bad choices, but I think Julio seems like he's been a pretty sound guy there. And I don't remember who else y'all had. I don't know who your slot guy was or any of those particulars. But it's interesting when you talk about there are layers. People hear character. Okay, there are layers of character. There's football intelligence. There is character like we traditionally think of, what kind of guy is the person? You know, there's what has he, you know, how has he responded when he has made bad decisions? So there's a lot of kind of tiers to that. And what I've always heard is you may take character risks in areas where you're strong and have leaders in the locker room. Pittsburgh has traditionally not paid its receivers. So Antonio Brown starts to get expensive, he's gone. Juju Smith-Schuster starts to get expensive, he's gone. It's interesting to me that they would take a guy like Claypool, who has made some bad choices in his NFL career and probably not been a gleaming character guy, at such a volatile position. Would y'all have, what did you see in Claypool? Were there red flags there? And were you more inclined to give him a second round grade because you did have some pretty strong character slash leader types at that position when you're in Atlanta?
Yeah, I think it was definitely some of both those factors. We did have Julio, and Julio was good in that room in some ways. Julio, for all the good PR, Julio took care of Julio. And again, that's any professional athlete's going to do that to a degree. Julio's got a good PR department that he, makes sure Julio looks like a good guy. And again, they're special player without question, and also a really good guy when he wanted to be with younger athletes. Now, I don't want to sit here and, degrade him. Julio was really good for the Falcons, obviously, for a long time. Obviously, Calvin comes in. Again, his dealt with a lot of different things, stuff that we knew about. That, again, if you want to get into what is lacking in some NFL buildings in terms of off-field, resources, stuff that I don't think the Falcons were prepared to deal with. Again, you can look at guys like Tack McKinley. Again, we're not at all prepared to deal with all that he brought to the table. Again, knew about all the issues, and I would say in some ways convinced ourselves as a Falcons, franchise that, yeah, we can deal with them because the player is really good. Again, guys like Russell Gage, continued developmental guy, hardworking guy. But with Chase, there were still personal character questions. Again, a guy out of Canada, not a great home life, kind of all over. Again, when he got to Notre Dame, a little bit all over in terms of what he was doing. But again, all stuff that a college kid is going to do in a lot of situations. Away from home, big time recruit. Again, he was originally coming in as an outside linebacker, which you look at the frame and it's like, yeah, I can see it. Again, a guy big, long, strong. For me, the development over the years to where in his dominant final year was also their best player on special teams that was tough, physical. He was their offensive weapon. He was the go-to guy. Again, they had good tight end. They had little Finke in the slot. They had, good solid Tony Jones at running back. But again, when the ball went up, when it was jump ball situation, again, they really struggled against Georgia that year, but Chase had some really nice plays in a tough environment. The progression for me for Chase was there that told me his football character was right. His personal character, I wouldn't say was weak, but it was something that was going to need a strong personal character presence. And I think, again, when you start talking about where he went in Pittsburgh, you think about some of the personalities. Juju Smith-Schuster, I couldn't stand. Again, he was a YouTube and TikTok video guy in the locker room multiple times a week. And Chase, in my opinion, fell into that and had, 11 touchdowns as a rookie, not much production outside of that. And all of a sudden, he thinks he's a little better than he is. Now, thankfully, he's gone down to Miami and been quiet, which is what he needs, and has some guys around him that, Tyreek isn't the cleanest soul. Hopefully getting some right mentorship there. Again, I know Coach McDaniel has dealt with some stuff. Hopefully, a good solid presence for him. But again, at the end of the day, he was a guy that, it wasn't just the character that knocked him down for us. It was his on-field play. It was his, I viewed him. Part of my second round grade on Chase was, this is a guy that has Julio-type traits that could eventually be our true number one. Calvin has number one ability, but again, if you put him and Chase, man, that's a dominant combination. At minimum, at worst for me, Chase was a really good number three that could also be, again, your best special teams player. That, to me, that was, a really nice pick for the Falcons if you get him in the second or third, which is why I put a second round grade on him. And again, obviously didn't pan out in Pittsburgh. Chicago was a mess for, again, who knows what reasons there. Still got to get himself figured out, I would say, in some ways. Has not done anything in Miami, but still a guy who I think will end up having an impact for Miami, or, if he gets it straightened out and goes somewhere else.
Now, was Claypool a guy, and again, forgive me for not knowing more about what he did in South Bend, but was he a guy that was – he didn't return kicks, I presume, which means more of a gunner type. He was going to be a guy
was
going to be going downfield and making the
yes,
tackle.
He played a little bit on kickoff more early on in his career. He was the best. He was basically, they were kind of a hybrid spread punt at Notre Dame, and he was basically a wing tight end on there. I mean, he was forcing fair catches. He was really tough. Again, he was a block guy, would get, force some pressure on punt block team. Again, like I said, early on kickoff, not a returner at all, but again, as a coverage player, he was going to be, again, he could have been the best coverage gunner. And again, if you probably put him probably at a two or three in the NFL on kickoff, he's going to be the best coverage player in the NFL, in my mm-hmm. opinion. So yeah, not a returner, but impact player.
And when you talk to older scouts, when I talk to older scouts, and we're talking about the guys that were longtime coaches, these are the guys, the gray beards that pretty much been run out of the league. But when they were scouting, there were schools that if you came out of that school, you kind of came with a halo effect. And I don't care if you killed somebody. Notre Dame was one of those schools. Penn State was one of those schools. There were several of them. Seemed like they kind of populate the Midwest. Do you think that Claypool benefited at all from the fact that he came from a Notre Dame, or has that kind of been washed away and all schools are kind of judged on their own merits now?
Yeah, no, again, there's always going to be – your big schools are always going to get the benefit of the doubt, because if you've done it, stayed eligible, done the right things, again, the head coach at the school is going to matter in those situations where maybe that's some of those schools that's been washed away a little bit based on who the head coach is and what he's going to allow. But again, I was the high guy, where some of our you would call them graybeard scouts were not the high guys on Claypool, and
right.
They were the ones that didn't like different aspects. So that would lend itself to the argument that the school didn't matter in that situation.
Right. It's interesting that the character discussion is such a difficult one, and we've discussed already on this platform how modern scouting philosophy is to bring in younger people who are more information gatherers. They're not going to usually be able to get a good pulse on character other than maybe how many whiz quizzes they failed, how many suspensions, maybe if they got in a fight, off the field stuff, jurisprudence, what have you, but not as much about the actual what makes the kid tick. This week we had our annual Next Wave Zoom, and what we do, we bring in three scouts. This year we brought in an area scout, a national scout, and a college director. And I don't want to say their names or teams because some of them need to get permission to come on. But for a half hour, each one of them spoke about the vagaries of scouting, more of their origin story, what they look for, because the audience was aspiring scouts. But one of them talked about his visits, and he talked about, let's say it's a school like in Alabama or a Penn State or a Nebraska or someone who typically has a lot of players and you're going to make multiple trips. He said, here's a school. Let's say if I'm going to make three trips to a school, kind of the character of each visit. The first visit is going to be in the summer. He kind of wants to get ahead of things, and he's going to talk to as many people there. And, in the summer, everybody is undefeated. Everyone's full of optimism. The possibilities are endless. You come in, people are pretty upbeat. And so he's just trying to get a handle on the players that are probably going to be the difference makers, and kind of get a kind of a cursory view of the team. Then he comes in maybe in October, if he can, or somewhere around midseason. That's going to be a tape grade. He's just coming in and try to watch as much tape as he can, see if the grades that he kind of got or the impressions he got on the first visit match up with what's going on in the field. And then he tries to come back maybe in November, because at that point, the die is cast on the season, and he finds that most coaches are willing to unload. I mean, they're going to clear the decks on everything they've got on a kid. Number one, they're angry and tired, and they've dealt with this guy's crap all year, and they're not going to cover for him anymore. And number two, that kid may not be coming back. I mean, especially if he's a draft eligible guy or whatever. So it's interesting how there's kind of a progression of what he even expects to get character-wise. In, visit number one, nothing. Visit number two, maybe some, but he's really still focused on the film. Visit number three, he's going in and try to find out, get all the dirty laundry aired and really grab as much of that as he can before he comes in December, and they have final meetings to really set the board. Was that your experience as well, Roger?
Yeah, there's definitely schools that are like that. And again, for us in Atlanta, it was always our big schools were minimum two visit schools. So again, you were probably going to get in there during camp or at minimum early in the season, depending on what restrictions were. And then, yeah, basically whenever else you could, you know, figure it out on your schedule to get in there. And it was, you know, super important to, again, weigh what you got round one with what you got round two. And you really try to that first visit, you are just, you know, in some ways drinking from a fire hose. You are writing down everything and keeping as many notes and tracking it. And for me, the in-person visit was as much about seeing, again, does the player, the way he practices, the way I see him, you know, getting ready, you know, pre-practice, post-practice, does it all mesh with what the way they talk about him? And then again, you're probably going to see him during a game at some point and then go visit that second time. And again, even going from warm to lukewarm tells you something, or going from hot to cold, depending again, does it match, you know, how well they're playing? Again, what are they saying in the academic department? Does that match what the football program says, or does the trainer speak about him in the same way as the strength room does? And again, you start reconciling all that information over any number of visits or phone calls, text messages. Again, you're on the sideline and you happen to catch up with somebody. All that information is, those are some of the times where you get the best information is in the non-formal sit-down setting with the scouts, which is where what I would say good scouts, not just those information gatherers, do their best work. And I would even say, you know, going back to our transfer portal conversation, the best information you get on guys is usually a year or two before they're going to the draft. Mm-hmm. Again, I think about some of the reports, you know, over the course of 2.5 years, how much it changed. Hated a kid. Now he's their best player. He's the best kid in the world. And I think about some of the information that I had over the years on guys like that, where it's, you know, you don't want to come out and say, like, you crushed this kid 2 years ago, or you crushed this kid last year. What's changed other than he's your best player? You don't ever want to go after a pro liaison or a coach like that, because again, they have an interest in it. And, you know, you want to make sure they're a good source. But again, you ask questions in a way to try to filter and glean that. Has the kid actually grown up, or, you know, is this just, you know, a situation where they're trying to make sure they sell a bill of goods to get their kid drafted so they can put his name up there and promote the program? So again, when you talk about multiple visits throughout the year, again, seeing what you're seeing, getting your character, seeing what happens on the sideline, seeing what happens when adversity hits in a game, does it all match up? Because the more it doesn't match up, the more you have to keep going back and answering questions.
You know, I wonder what if that evolution still holds for players now that they're spending less time in schools and bouncing around a little bit. You know, you don't get to see that arc necessarily. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe, you know, coaches that only have a kid for 1 year, you know, and that kid, that's got to be their payoff year. Then they get to see warts and all, and they don't ever cover for him. Or maybe it's the reverse. You know, I don't know, and I don't know that anybody necessarily knows how the transfer portal is going to impact character evaluation, but it is going to be interesting to see, because you just don't get that 3 to 4, sometimes 5 years of really looking at a kid and seeing their progression, their maturity, and all those kind of things. You're just seeing them practically glimpses of them, you know. Yeah. So I think that the challenge is going to be greater for teams to figure all that stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we hit on last week, I think the collaborative approach to scouting has to improve. Again, you can't be in a silo when you get a guy for 1 year, and sometimes it's 6 months, right? A guy transfers in and out. And again, with depending on what happens with their spring, you know, they have an offseason surgery. Again, a team and a coaching staff can have a guy for 6 months. You don't get to get know a guy in 6 months. The academic mm-hmm. staff doesn't have a chance to get, you know, they're just, you know, in a lot of situations, just trying to make sure they're eligible to get through the year and, you know, move along. And your information from scout to scout now has to match up. Because when it doesn't, again, that's it's just like when it doesn't match up visit one to visit two to visit three, it's now visit year one to the next year at a different school. If your scouts are not viewing through the same lens, the player, then again, you've got a lot more work to do through the pre-draft process to figure out exactly who this player is, because more mistakes are made based on projecting character than projecting talent without question, because that's, you're dealing with people at the end of the day, you're dealing with people, you're dealing with 19, 20, 22, 23 year old young men who again have any number of backgrounds, and trying to figure out what they're going to be come, you know, 26, 27, 28 with, you know, a few million dollars in their pocket. That's the hard part. You're dealing with people. As anybody knows, people can make their own decisions, and sometimes good, sometimes bad.
One other question for you, Roger, because I haven't been in your shoes. Let's say there were times when you graded a kid in a certain way and the national guy came in and took him down for character reasons. Does the national guy, because he's got such a wide range and got to hit so many places, does he ever get to go deep enough to get the character information, which I think, you know, we can all look at a kid coming off the field, know what he looks like. We can all see his, you know, how he performs on Saturdays. But did national guys ever come in with the depth on the character side to be able to really make a change, or were they just kind of coming in to try to more or less verify what you had already said about, you know, the top players?
That's where, thankfully, in Atlanta, I had two really good national scouts who both I trusted. I also knew, and they were honest about where they were going to be able to dive deep. Again, national scouts typically are going to have been area scouts.
Right.
So they have a little bit longer list and maybe a few more close sources.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where, as an area scout, you've got to understand, you know, when, you know, there were times where our national scout would come in and, you know, it would be just, hey, all I've seen is the player. I got this at the initial meeting, and, you know, I'm leaving it to our area scout to do the deep dive. But again, some of those situations, you know, good national scouts maybe have a conversation with you prior to give you a heads up. Hey, I'm going to be different here. I've got a really good source here, man. I trust you. I trust you. You're my guy. I'm going to let you, you know, have this one. I'm going to give my 2 cents. I'm going to turn it over to my national guy who's got a really good source. I trust him. I maybe had a little bit of questions on it. I wasn't able to get that same source information as him. Again, all goes back to having a good team and having that good rapport with your guys at every level. Because when you don't, and you start ramming heads, and you start, you know, kind of having a swinging contest to see who has the bigger unit that they can put out there, that's not good for a team. Because again, the team is trying to get them right. It's not about the area guy being right. It's not about the national guy being right. It's about the team being right at the end of the day. And when you start having those conflicts, those personal battles, that's not good for anybody.
Now, one other question. Phil and Rustin were both there when you were there, right?
They were both there, yep.
So you had two GMs who had a lot of skins on the wall, had been in the game for a long time. How often did they kind of weigh in and say, listen, I think this is a character risk. I'm hearing things that make me nervous about a player. I mean, again, those guys are two pretty veteran guys. I mean, what kind of impact did they have on the day-to-day evaluation of players?
Yeah, no, Rustin and Phil were awesome. I actually had the chance to work for Rustin when he was the GM in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Both fantastic guys. They were, again, if a national guy was only doing surface level character, it was very much the same for those guys, probably even at a more amplified level. Again, they were really focusing on the player, get the player right. And again, those guys, you start talking about high level sources. Mm-hmm. Again, those guys, Rustin or Phil, could probably call the head coach at 75% of the universities out there, mm-hmm. and talk and probably get a pretty honest answer. Now, again, every one of those answers may be a selling answer. And I think about some of the conversations both those guys had, again, educationally for young scouts, again, going back through their Rolodex of guys that they as GMs had drafted, as directors had drafted, just guys they had been around that they passed on for different reasons. There were some really, really good conversations. But again, at the end of the day, there were times with both of those guys where I felt very strongly. And as a young guy, I was not afraid to push back a little bit on those guys and challenge them I felt strong about my sources. And again, every player's unique. And again, taking fully into account what they said and why they said it. But again, at the end of the day, you know, standing on what I believed in. And again, just with those guys too, and with any scout, personal relationship matters too with the people and where they've been. And again, I think that's where sometimes a personal relationship and the information you get, no matter how many red flags, I'm thinking of one player in particular in my mind that did not pan out in my last draft with the Falcons, and the relationship that caused some information to be probably taken in a different way than it should have. And I don't want to sit here and poo-poo on the player or that information, but I think about the way that affected and how it did not work out in any way, shape, or form. So again, all of it's taken into account and has to be evaluated ultimately by the GM and head coach to make sure that information's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a difficult thing, and I don't think any two teams do it exactly the same way, but it's such a crucial part of it, and never more crucial than today when the stakes are so high and there's obviously a lot of money going out and just a lot of key decisions that are made that maybe made more on the player's ability, but that, what happens off the field is also a big part of that, and how they're going to act in the locker room and all those kind of things. We hear so much about character. It's undersold. I mean, sometimes we don't think about it as much, but it's certainly something that is an important part of the evaluation as teams set their boards going into All-Star season, well in advance of the combine, but not too far before that as well. And then, and then pro days as again. One other note that I will say, I get a lot of questions about games in December, All-Star games, and whether or not a player should attend these games. And I'm always, there's just such a big asterisk there. Now, Michael Quarte in Florida runs a great game called the FCS Bowl, and it's mostly populated by FCS D2, D3 type players. And I think mostly draws scouting assistant level evaluators from the teams that they come in. And that's not to denigrate Michael. He does a fabulous job, but I think it's important to note that if you've got some of these games that kind of pop up and then go away and stuff, there's important work that's being done in these weeks before Christmas. And most teams are not going to send scouts out to evaluate games, especially if they've kind of got lesser talent, because it's so important for them to be in meetings and to be really kind of gathering all the information and getting loaded up and putting all the hay in the barn for January. So just a note to those young agents out there who may hear about All-Star games that take place in December. Again, I endorse Michael's game, the FCS Bowl, but some of these other fly-by-night ones, just not a smart thing. If you go to an All-Star game and there's no scouts there, did the game even play? And I realize that there's film that's available, but there's already so much film that's available. I don't know how many scouts really sift through and watch that kind of stuff in a way that's going to move the needle for anyone. So just one little commentary, because it's a question I get pretty often this time of year, and I think it's something that's important to address.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. That's perfect. So hitting on the character, Neil, you obviously mentioned the football intelligence. That's a huge thing that's tied into that football character portion. The biggest thing, football intelligence, comes up through the process in those December meetings is who do we really need to do work on? Who is the guy that there is a question from the staff, shows up on film, missed assignments, maybe looks lost? That's one of those things that's really hard to evaluate, because again, you get guys that are 1 year in schemes, 3 years in schemes. There are guys that cannot learn football, but they were fortunate enough to spend 4 or 5 years in one scheme, and by their senior year, they really look like they know it. Again, that's a big time just marker that you're going to throw on a guy, like, hey, through the process, pro day, All-Star game, we got our do our work there. Another big one is your effort, motor, toughness score. Again, I think about when Coach Quinn was our head coach and we had what was called our CT, our competes and toughness scores. That was huge for the way Q wanted to run his program. You look at what Coach Campbell's done up in Detroit and the way that defense plays. I'd imagine they have, again, their Lions score, their, you know, Campbell score, whatever it is. Like, we want dudes that are relentless, tough, physical. Again, maybe you know, take some away. Again, some, maybe his football intelligence isn't as high, but he is an absolute dog out there. Again, it shows up. Aiden Hutchinson obviously is a great example of that. Again, on the flip side of that, you look at guys, long conversation we had in Atlanta on Christian Darrisaw, some of the most impressive left tackle snaps in the country coming out of Virginia Tech, but he also had some of the lowest motor snaps coming out. Again, how does your team and program value that? Can you get over it? And can you, you know, is it a question you have to try to figure out through the process or not? And then, like I said, throw your logo, throw your, you know, your Lions, your Falcons, your Panther score up there. Again, that's going to be a big one. There's those guys that are going to probably have a logo of the team on their sticker come draft day. Those are the dudes. Those are the guys you want on your team. Answer all the questions, have all the things you want. And again, that right there is going to be probably 75% of what a team discusses during those December meetings. You'll get to your final summaries then. Again, where do you see them? Where do you see them fitting on your roster? Where are they as a player? Again, where do you see them? Maybe you start to get into the overall numbers of the class. Again, where is he going to stack up in the wide receiver class, the offensive tackle class, anything like that? And again, that's going to be a big, big portion of what you do with your December meetings. As you said, as I said, every team does it a little bit differently. There's no right or wrong way to do it. Again, when Thomas was our GM, we spent very little time on December meetings because Thomas, come year 10, year 11, he had a really good feel for his process. Now, under Terry, we spent a lot of time on it when Terry Fontenot came in as a GM. Kyle Smith did a fantastic job leading those meetings and was really a new process for all the scouts we had in Atlanta. So again, we had an experience of doing it two different ways. So no different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And I think the last thing is, again, as different teams evaluate players different ways, character related, I think some may put football intelligence above other aspects, kind of like what you alluded to as well. Some may say toughness, and that's probably, you know, kind of a Dan Campbell kind of thing as well. That's my impression. I've obviously never worked there, but you know, I have heard that, like, Steve Spagnuolo, who's in Kansas City and runs a rather complicated defense, asked his scouts, "Hey, is this guy smart? Is he going to pick this up?" And I think that's, you know, another point to make. I mean, that's where your FBI comes in a real dramatic way for that team. So I guess my point is, it's just, character is not simply does he do what he's supposed to and not, you know, get arrested or suspended or whatever. It's a really complicated topic and probably one we could spend more than one session on. But it also fascinates me. And as I work through my next book, which is going to be about the 2016 draft, the character question keeps coming up, you know, in the players that I focus on. You know, we've got eight guys we focus on for that draft class. And it's really interesting to see how they all kind of were evaluated and how the people that compete, you know, that they were kind of competing against them were evaluated and their relative intelligences and characters and all those kind of things. And that was the Laramie Tunsil draft, which, you know, we could probably spend an hour on as well. I mean, and how that one video instantly impacted the character grades of what the 16 teams ahead of the Dolphins that passed on him. So, very, really fascinating topic and such a complicated one and such a different, you know, and so many teams do it in different ways that it probably could breed lots more conversation than even what we've given it today.
Yeah, no question. Kind of the last little piece the December meetings talk about is the ever-present underclassmen they're going to be declaring. Again, as scouts are told every year, you know, you're not allowed to ask about juniors, not allowed to ask about underclassmen. Some schools are wide open. Some schools prefer. I think about one of my better visits, SEC school in my area. They preferred to only talk about underclassmen. Sometimes they would talk about non-draft eligible guys just because they would get excited about him, excited about the future. You had to, you know, try to twist his arm, you know, to get him to talk about the senior draft guys. But again, those underclassmen, there's some guys where, yeah, without a doubt, this guy's coming out. You're probably going to include him in your character read, your final summer read. some of those guys, again, that's where your, you know, your area, regional, national are going to talk about, hey, I've got a good indicator that this guy's going to come out. Again, I think about a couple years ago, the Michigan State roster, Kenneth Walker, Jaden Reed, had one other wide receiver that were all part of a group where we had a mixed bag of, hey, who's actually going to come out, who's going to go back. Again, indicators go on those guys, flags go on those guys. Hey, we need to start doing some work on those guys, make sure our notes are lined up on those guys. So if they make the decision, we'll be ready to rock with those guys. And again, some of these schools where, hey, this player has been talking about coming out all year, but I've got a source that said he's going back. Maybe he's in the transfer portal now. Maybe we can take that guy off the board, but you've already got a year's worth of work done on that guy. So underclassmen become a part of that conversation and are important because, again, as we see every year, the number of underclassmen in the round, first round, it's primarily underclassmen. It is heavily loaded with underclassmen. After that, again, you get your seniors. But again, to set the front board is really important to have those underclassmen in it to start to feel through the process. Again, they end up usually being some of your better players, which is why they're coming out early. So all part of the process with those guys. And for you and for me, again, with the transfer portal now and what we're doing, you know, all year long is helping those guys make the decision. Is it draft? Should we jump into the draft, or is it, you know, hop into the portal and go get paid $1.5 million, $2 million at some schools, you know, $20 million for Marvin Harrison to go back allegedly? Is it worth it for him to jump in or go, you know, go play their NFL dreams or find out what else is out there? So underclassmen, a big part of it. Something you get hit on a lot with inside the league, underclassmen?
Not just that, but I mean, are they going to play in the bowl game? Are they going to transfer? Are they going to do all those things? And I know that impacts scouts as well as agents. You look at a player like a Quinn Ewers who looked like a lead pipe cinch to come out all season. And now, I mean, and he's got a guy behind him who may transfer if he doesn't. And now, you know, he's playing the CFP, so we know that he's going to at least be in his bowl game. We're going to be waiting until the end of the year to even know if he's going to come back or not. And I know that a lot of teams have done a lot of work on him. So, yeah, I mean, so many different variables and so many different aspects of things that make this a really complicated game and a lot of fun for the fans to kind of watch and see. But for the people whose lives are on the line, who've got to get this stuff right, it really gets complicated. And then, you know, of course, I think that's something we've talked about previously, but a lot of the day three types that a lot of my agents have recruited all season are starting to get wooed by their coaches because they've got that COVID year and they can make a little bit of money. They can come back. And a lot of those guys who had a nice season this year, maybe they're a fourth or fifth rounder. If they go to the 24 draft, if they go out and get hurt or they have a lackluster season, or maybe the kid behind them gets a little more playing time than they do, that goes away. And it still might've been the right decision for them. Maybe they were on the bubble to make a roster, but there's just a lot that goes into it and so many ways to go and so many decisions to make. And it makes things complicated, but I guess to some degree, it makes it fun as well. It's just one reason why this is such a fascinating game.
Yeah. Yeah. Those underclassmen, certainly they're what keeping scouts motivated to keep doing their work, keep reaching out. Again, you get those surprise guys. Again, I think about guys from, you know, some of the bigger schools, some of your, you know, championship schools that all of a sudden, you know, they have, you know, 15 guys declare. I think about that Ohio State roster after they won the national championship and some of the guys that chose to declare early, poor decisions. Again, looking back on it now, go undrafted. But again, every one of those guys has to be on a radar somewhere, which again, all goes back to what we discussed last week. It is better to be a second level, third level thinker than just follow your list because you will be behind. Again, for most good scouts, their work on juniors is at this point, 60 to 70% done. At least they have been doing the work. They've been paying attention. They understand, again, not just surface level. What does my list tell me to do? But again, it creates a lot easier springtime. Again, less stressful all-star game time, less stressful trying to call back and get information from pro liaisons and coaches who are now moved on to 2024 season. Right. They're worried about now their current roster. They're done talking about their guys. They want to promote them. You're going to get a couple good lines from them. But again, it's harder to get that information on those underclassmen. Mm-hmm. You know, schools will do their calls. Again, they know that they'll they're going to pump those guys up. January calls on underclassmen are not going to say pointless, but you can pretty much know the information you're going to get on those guys because they want them to go and get drafted really high. So, again, for any area scouts that are, you know, doing their work out there, man, be willing to do that extra now. Be willing to grind a little bit harder, listen a little bit more attentively, read between the lines, look at the body language when pro liaisons, sources are talking about players. And again, don't be afraid to take some notes on underclassmen when you're there. And, you know, even if it's just your information for now, that's fine. You can take notes on whoever you want. So lots of stuff on underclassmen, lots of stuff on December meetings. Anything we missed, do you think, for December meetings?
I don't think so. I think we're at this point now. I mean, every year I try to have my next wave meeting in the second week of December, and everyone's like pushes back and says, man, I can't do it then. It's not until the week of Christmas that things slow down enough to where people can actually talk and even get on Zoom for a half hour. It's funny that one of my friends does all the Christmas shopping. One of the people that's on our Zoom this week does all the Christmas shopping in his house. I said, man, doesn't your wife help you? He said, listen, I'm on the road basically for 4 months. I try to take as much off her plate as I can when I can. So he's got a really busy week ahead of him. I feel sorry for him. He's going to be paying a little extra from Amazon to deliver those things overnight or whatever, to make sure he's got stuff under the tree. But yeah, interesting life that scouts lead. And that building that board is so important and such a key aspect of what's going to happen the last weekend in April, and kind of an understated part, but a very important part. And so I guess that hay is in the barn. So now we can kind of focus on the All-Star games and the next level of evaluation.
Yep, absolutely. The December meetings time for most scouts is a big sigh of relief once you get those done. Again, guys that are better presenters don't worry about as much. But again, I've been around guys who absolutely hated to talk in front of the group. Again, they breathe their sigh of relief now. Enjoy their Christmas. Enjoy their New Year's. We will be back between Christmas and New Year's. I'd imagine we'll talk about All-Star games. I think that'd be a good thing to hit on. Again, whether it's one of these smaller ones, the CGS, the Hula, or the Tropical, or we can hit on that Senior Bowl in East-West as well. What are scouts really doing there? What are they working on? What is really their focus when they go to those games? And, you know, maybe we'll tell a story or two over the years. Before we go, let me remind you to check out Agent Live 360. If you're an agent out there, a marketing representative, anybody that has a list of clients, go check out Agent Live 360. We are the number one CRM for sports agents, designed by agents for sports agents. Again, I'll hop on, give you a demo of the software. Maybe we can talk some football during it. Again, agentlive360.com. Sign up for a demo today. We'll get you that. Again, don't forget to like, subscribe, share this podcast, continue to get the word out. Again, let us know what topics you want to hear, what you like, what you agree with, what you disagree with. If you want more stories, let us know that. Of course, I'm on X at RightStepADV. Neil's on at Inside the League. Neil, you have a Merry Christmas and enjoy it. Enjoy time with the family, staying home.
Back at you, Roderick. Merry Christmas, everyone out there. Thank you so much for listening in. We hope we're giving you what you're looking for. I know Roderick and I, we're just kind of ripping here and having a good time talking football, and I hope that y'all are enjoying it as well as you listen in.
Yep, I know for Neil and myself, again, our wives probably don't ever want to get even, you know, an inch deep in the topics we go to. So it's a fantastic outlet. And again, hopefully you enjoy it too. Again, everybody out there, have a Merry Christmas. Keep scouting.